Open the Joint Ways and Means Committee on Subcommittee on Natural Resources for March 15th, Ides of March, 2017. And we will be starting off with a public hearing on HB 5009, Department of Energy, actually continuing that hearing. So if we, I think I'll start off, we'll open that hearing right now. And I know you have to run, Senator Girard, that's fine. But I just needed someone here to start it off. Do we need to have Mike Kaplan and folks, if you'd like to come forward, that would be helpful. I think we are. Where are we on that? He was starting to talk about the governor's budget, as I recall.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee. Thanks for having us back again. We'll just start jumping right into the governor's recommended budget. I'm joined by my chief operating officer, Blake Johnson, for the record, Mike Kaplan, director of the department, and I'll turn it over to him.
Thank you. Chair Frederick, members of the committee, for the record, Blake Johnson, chief operating officer of the Department of Energy. So I will walk through the governor's budget and also our key performance measures and our budget reduction options. This first table shows our ledge approved, our current biennium's ledge approved budget and our proposed 17-19 governor's recommended budget. Main things to point out here is our current budget is $182 million and our governor's recommended budget is just under $41 million. That's a 77% decrease. This table also shows the breakout by division. Our energy planning innovation, you see we have almost a 12% reduction. EDS, our energy development services, a 10% reduction in limited funds and 100% reduction in non-limited funds. That represents the SELP program leaving the agency. Nuclear safety and emergency preparedness, a 3.5% reduction. And energy facility siting, a modest 7.1% increase. And then administrative services, a 14% increase. This next chart shows our budget history, going back to 2009-11 biennium. As you can see, we've taken a steady decrease. Our maximum back in 9/11 was $309 million. We're down to $40.8 million right now. Things to point out here is there in 9/11 and 11/13, that third color down, the light green, that's federal funds. That's the tail end of federal stimulus money. And then the other two colors there, dark green and the gold, that's the non-limited funds that represent the SELP program. And as you can see, those disappear in 17-19. Here's a quick snapshot to show you our administrative costs as a percentage of the entire budget. It's about 34%. In our case, administrative costs includes the governor's or director's office, which is human resources, communications, government affairs, the director. It also includes our governor's policy advisor and a couple positions we have that staff the Northwest Planning Council. Quick look at our history for federal funds. Like most agencies in the state, are at best, federal funds are flat. Most likely they're declining. As you can see there, we were flat for three biennia, right around $3 million, and we've got a slight decrease now going forward. The asterisks there in 9/11 and 11/13 are to show that this does not include that stimulus money that I pointed out earlier, because that was just basically pass-through money. Here's a breakout of our other funds revenues. As you can see, the big revenue source for us is energy supplier assessment, $15.5 million going forward. That makes up about 59% of our other funds revenue. The next big chunk there is siting and EIP fees. We charge application fees, amendment fees, things like that to recover costs. The third chunk there is charges for services. So for instance, the SB 1149 public purpose charge, when we send out staff to help with that, we recoup their cost. State home oil weatherization, $800,000, that we get that for that program. And then a little bit of other revenues, such as our renewable energy development grant or red grant funds and interest and fines, things like that. So this chart shows our energy supplier assessment over time. The bar is the assessment and the line is the expenditures. What I'd like to point out here is in 13-15 we actually spent down our ending balance. That was part of an agreement we made during the budget session. And then another thing to point out in 17-19, which shows $15.1 million, that's the expenditure. As I noted earlier, our ask is $15.4 million, so we're asking to build back up that ending balance a little bit. Here's a little primer on how we calculate the energy supplier assessment. So we determine our assessment by taking our legislatively approved budget, which you approve. Those are expenditures, and we back out our expected revenues, and then the difference there will be our ESA. And in our case, we estimate for this coming biennium $15.1 million in expenditures, and we want to assess 15.4 to build up that ending balance. We then asked us energy suppliers for their gross operating revenues for previous year, and then we will distribute that assessment among the suppliers according to their how they rank or their portion of the total gross operating revenues. For 2016, we used 2015 revenue numbers, and we had reported gross operating revenues from anywhere from $270,000 up to $1.8 billion. We assess about 70 utilities or producers. And as I said, we distribute that proportionally. And then at the end, we make sure that we stay underneath our statutory cap. By statute, we cannot charge more than 0.375% of total gross operating revenues, or 37.5 cents for every $100. In actuality, we are well below that. We're around 11 to 12 cents per $100. Here's a quick sample calculation. For instance, energy supplier X, we send them a form, ask them to fill out part A, which is their total gross operating revenue. In this case, it's $20 million. They take out their allowable deductions, which could be inter-utility sales or sales outside the state or sales that are subject to the gas tax. So in this case, it will reduce $3 million, so their net gross operating revenue is $17 million. Next, we figure out the supplier's ratio, and so we take that $17 million, divide it by the total gross operating revenue, which last year was $5.7 billion, so their ratio is 0.003. We take that 0.003 and multiply it by our assessment. So last year we assessed $6.6 million, and so a supplier's X's assessment would have been $19,674. To give you an idea how much that is less than 10 cents for every $100 of their gross operating revenue. If the double asterisk there, if the calculated assessment is less than $250, then the supplier does not have to pay it because we won't collect those small amounts. Here's a snapshot of who actually pays our energy supplier assessment. As I mentioned, last year we assessed $6.56 million on a total gross operating revenue of $5.67 billion. There on the right, the biggest chunk is the three investor-owned utilities. They paid $3.6 million, or roughly 55% of the entire assessment. The 38 consumer-owned utilities shared $1.2 million, or 19%. The four natural gas companies, $900,000, or 14%. Nine propane companies, $100,000, then 16 other suppliers shared $600,000. So to give you an example of what those others are, Port of Tillamook Bay, some of the wind farms that sell directly to a consumer and not inter-utility, and then the big oil companies, Phillips 66, Shell, Mobil, BP, and Chevron, which sell some oil directly to the consumers, or fuels directly to consumers in the state.
Yes.
Yeah, the question I have is, according to
these little notes that I got here. There's a budget note for the 17-19 biennium to keep the ESA at 13.1 million. Is that still on the books? Are we still going to plan on abiding by that?
Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee, Senator Girod, the budget note that was approved last biennium was for the agency request budget. So when we submitted our agency request budget, it did limit the ESA to 13.1. The remaining portion of the revenue we needed, we submitted as general fund. The governor's recommended budget then made a different decision for how our revenue should be allocated in light of the general fund hole that we have this biennium. There obviously wasn't extra to go around, so it was switched all back to ESA. So we have fulfilled the budget note in that agency request budget where it directed us toward.
Okay. So now,
yes,
I'll step.
Yes, Representative Escobar.
But aren't you asking for 15.4? Didn't you want to raise your ending balance by 300,000? And if so, why?
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee, Representative Escobar. Part of the budgetary challenges that I talked about yesterday were sort of unsustainable decisions that had been made in 13-15. Our ending balance serves as a leveling agent for when gross operating revenue goes down, that we have the resources on hand so that we don't create wild swings in what the assessment is. In 13-15, the agency spent down their ending balance so far to artificially hold the energy supplier assessment, the actual assessment low, that ability for us to sort of be able to weather what is likely sort of up and down gross operating revenue went away. And so by raising the ending balance, we're actually able to offer security over time to prevent sort of wild swings in what the assessment is. The other thing it allows us to do is to have cash on hand in case there are unforeseen circumstances throughout the biennium so that we don't have to go to this revenue stream unexpectedly. So it sort of serves as a safety valve on a variety of fronts, and we're trying to rebuild that ending balance after it had been burned down unsustainably in 13-15.
Any more questions? Please go ahead.
So now I'll walk through each division, the budget build. This will be a theme throughout each division. On the right side on that box is we start with the current service level and then add the packages. One thing I want to note here is packages 91 and 92 are statewide adjustments that were made to every agency. Package 91 was a DAS charge adjustment, and package 92 was a state attorney general adjustment. Those are pretty small in our agency. I won't really discuss them as we walk through it. I just wanted to point that out. Also, we'll have each slide will have a set of budget drivers and environment. So here in planning and innovation, some of the budget drivers are ESA funds about 75% of this division because there's no real income stream for them. It's a policy division. We do get some USDOE state energy program funds. I apologize, it says plan funds, but we call it SEP, and so plan and program kind of get thrown out there. That is a formula grant from DOE, and then we also apply for as many federal grant awards as we can get. So the environment, there is a demand for energy efficiency and energy conservation, so we have these policy people doing that work. Big demand for renewable energy, and then, as I mentioned, we try as much as possible to get federal grants. Our revenue sources for P&I, again, energy supplier assessment is about 75% or $4.6 million. We do get some cost recovery fees for SB 1149 or the public purpose charge schools program, and also for the SEED program, which is the state energy efficiency design. Again, when we send staff out to consult, we bill for those staff hours to try and pay for our staff. We also have some federal funds in here. And walking through the packages, package 70 is a revenue shortfall package. As Senator Girod mentioned, we did have a budget note for this biennium, which capped our ESA our agency request budget at 13.1 million. When we built our CSL, the required ESA was above 13.1 million, so we put in these package 70s to get us back down to that level. So in PNI, we eliminated one position, a program analyst two, which saved $164,000 in ESA. We also took out some empty federal funds limitation. Package 90, the analyst adjustments. These adjustments were made by Ms. Connolly over there, who works for CFO. The analyst took two positions, a 0.63 FTE. So one was a halftime position. One was the remnants of a position that we used for funding other positions. So it's a vacant position, but only 0.13 FTE. So the analyst took two positions, a total of 0.63 FTE, $180,000. We have one package in PNI, package 110, US DOE State Energy Program Fund Shift. We use some of our federal SEP funds in the RETSI program in the EDS division. The RETSI program is sunsetting at the end of 2017, so we shifted those funds over to PNI to work in the schools program, and this is basically just a fund shift to get those funds over into this division. Next is the Energy Development Services Division. CSL was $132.6 million. As you walk through this, we see we end up with a budget of $13.5 million. So this is where the CELP program comes out of. Again, that's a major budget driver here is this, the removal of the CELP program and then the sunset of our tax credit programs. Major environmental issues, the tax credit programs barely cover their own costs, and now since they are being phased out, that tail lasts a little bit longer, so they won't be able to cover their own costs, so some ESA is needed to backfill that. Our revenue sources, we do fee recovery, we do charge fees for our tax credit program, some application fees, loan revenue from the CELP program, which now will be going away, and then we do have energy ESA in this division, about 6% of the division, or $800,000. Again, we had a revenue reduction, package 70. We eliminated the vacant CFO position. The analyst in package 90 took out the CELP, the Small Energy Loan Program. That's eight positions, 7.66 FTE, $1.5 million other funds, and then all of our non-limited funds. 120 million other funds non-limited and 104,000 federal funds non-limited. We also have another package in EDS. It's package 120, Renewable Energy Development Grant Program. The red grants are funded through tax credits sold by the Treasury Department. They sell the tax credits, give us the cash. We enter into performance agreements with projects, but we don't actually pay the award until a project is finished. So we have the cash on hand. What we're asking for here is just an increase in other funds limitations so we can actually pay that money out during the coming biennium. Nuclear safety and emergency preparedness. The main budget drivers here is Hanford. Hanford funding is almost all federally funded. It's remaining flat, but there is a lot of pressure on that funding. Also, emergency preparedness funding is stable. We charge people to help develop their emergency preparedness plans. Again, revenue sources, federal funding, which is under pressure, funding from facility owners such as the LNG port at Coos Bay. As part of their application process, they have to have emergency preparedness plans in place. We help them develop that. Also, the Columbia Generating Station up in Washington, since it is close to the Columbia River, we help with their emergency preparedness. We also charge some fees, and a little bit of ESA goes to this division as well, about 16% or $350,000. We have one package in nuclear safety and emergency preparedness. It's a revenue reduction. It's basically just removing empty federal fund limitation because our funding is flat, but our costs keep going up. Energy facility siting. Our budget drivers here are activities in the federal in facility siting applications and certificate holders, which come in for amendments. The environment is energy demand is driven by the renewable portfolio standard. Projects are coming in, fewer projects, but they're more complex. And we have had in the past difficulty recruiting and maintaining staff. We're finally fully staffed, and things are going smoothly at the moment. Our revenue sources are cost recovery fees. We charge fees to review applications and to review amendments. And then there is a little bit of ESA in here that covers the Energy Facility Siting Council, about $600,000 or 12% of the budget. We have a package in siting, a package 140, Energy Siting Fiscal Support, that makes a limited duration position permanent. We've had this position in the agency for the last two biennia, and one of DAS's rules of thumb is if you continue a limited duration for more than two biennia, then you try to make it permanent. And that's what we're asking now, is to make this position permanent. Lastly, administrative services. Main budget drivers here, we have moved, as Mr. Kaplan pointed out yesterday, we've moved into a new, more appropriate building. Our old building, we're paying less than market rent because the building really didn't deserve market rent. Now we are in a DAS building, so we're paying the uniform rent. We provide the services necessary to support all the other programs, and we do have significant litigation expenses. Our environment, public, and policymaker interest, we get a lot of public records requests that require staff time to complete. We have multiple stakeholders with diverse interest, and we continue to improve our internal controls and accountability to help serve the agency better. We use an indirect funding model for our administrative service, basically our overhead. We assess an indirect charge to the other divisions to help pay for admin services. We assess that charge on personal services, so it's about 49%. So say if the personal services in EDS is X dollars, we charge them 49% of that to help pay for overhead. And also the ESA pays for our director's office, about $4.2 million or 30% of the total budget. Package 70, we did do some reductions in administrative services, basically a 15% reduction in services and supplies, again, to try and get down below that $13.1 million ESA cap. The analysts had to make some adjustments with the removal of the SELP program. Since we do use an indirect model, we lost that revenue for overhead. Even though that program is going away, our overhead doesn't go away. So this adjustment is actually just a revenue adjustment. It increases the revenue to administrative services to help pay overhead. Package 150, Governor's Energy Policy Advisor. Just like in the previous example, our Energy Policy Advisor has been a limited duration position for the last two biennia. So this biennia, we're asking to make it permanent. Package 151, Energy Data Consolidation Enhancement. This is the IT ask that Mr. Kaplan talked about yesterday. It implements an industry standard customer relationship management system. This will allow the agency to manage and analyze customer interactions and data across all divisions and channels with the goal of improving business relationships and streamlining processes. So this is the first step in our getting back up to speed in IT department. As Mr. Kaplan mentioned yesterday, we've done all the inexpensive things we can do, and now we're getting the part where we're going to have to start spending some money. And our last package 152, litigation expense. As I mentioned, we do have some extraordinary litigation, and so we're asking for some extra funds to help pay for that. So that's the budget. Next up is the key performance measures. I'll stop here if you have questions.
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. You talked about litigation expenses, and I apologize because I haven't been here as much as I probably should be, but I've been doing things that are important. Can you kind of enlighten me as to what we're talking about for litigation expenses, and why is this an inordinate time?
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee, Senator Girard, there are several active cases that we're involved in and preparing to potentially be involved in more, specifically related to Betsy-related issues. There's potential there. We have ongoing litigation expenses related to our SELP program. We also have an active lawsuit about the energy supplier assessment as well that we expect to probably last this coming biennium and perhaps maybe even to the biennium after that. So we see some vulnerability in the AG expenses, and so we're addressing that now before you, before we might need an emergency board intervention at some point in the future.
Follow up on that. What's our exposure on these lawsuits?
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee, Senator Girard, it certainly depends on the lawsuit. I don't have an overall number, and it depends on the issue and the breadth of the case. So we could try and walk you through some of the individual things at some point, maybe follow up with you on that, but I don't have a okay. concrete risk number.
Yes, go ahead.
Final question is, when the ESA payer, when will they get notified and billed for the ESA payers? When will they get notified and billed?
Chair Frederick, Senator Girard, we will send out a request for their gross operating revenue next month, but we won't be able to figure out their assessment until after the end of the session and we know what our legislatively adopted budget is. And so that would be probably in July.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I may have several questions if I
might. Please go right ahead.
The loan revenue that you described, where is the principal and interest paid back to?
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, the principal and interest is paid to the department.
Yes.
And then that goes to underlying bond servicing, so paying back the bonds that funded the loans.
Okay, so it's bond service.
And I should say, and also that revenue pays for our administrative expenses in the SELP program as well, so it covers both.
Right, thank you. And you also had a line item of $600,000 for the Energy Facilities Siting Council. And what precisely does that fund within the Energy Facilities Siting Council?
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee, I think you're referring to the energy supplier assessment money that goes to the energy facility siting.
The $600,000, yes.
So not everything that siting does can be. We try to all the work that we can attribute to a potential project or an amendment or a compliance work, we bill. But siting certainly does work that is not attributable to an individual project. For example, for the last year, we've been engaged on a work group between the governor's office, Umatilla Electric Co-op, a variety of agricultural providers in the Umatilla Basin about the tension between future transmission and high-value agriculture. Well, at this point, there's no project to bill for that work, but it is still demanding siting analyst time, the division manager's time, my time, for example. So. And they're also working on policy and rulemaking and funding the council. Not every expense, and this is by statute, we're constrained for how much we can, what's just and reasonable to bill an applicant for. So that ESA goes to siting to cover those expenses.
And is the statute specify $600,000?
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee, no. The reverse of that, actually. What statute limits siting to are costs that are just and reasonable for their applicants. So it's what those expenses that are beyond the individual applicant's responsibility that end up being ESA. And the way ESA works generally for the agency is we have to consider every other revenue source for every other program, and then what's left falls to the energy supplier assessment.
So if it's a matter of selecting a universe, which essentially is y'all come, how do we determine that $600,000 is the appropriate target?
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee. Well, first, the first thing that we've done over the last, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday, the last 3 years, is trying to ramp up the amount to make sure that we are billing and having as much cost recovery as we possibly can for siting. Mm-hmm. That is the first goal. And we likely expect to see some legislation this session that will improve that even further.
What we have right now in our budget is an anticipation of those costs. Obviously, that is dynamic, and that will change based on we might see more applications in the next 2 years. We can't really tell the future, so we do the best forecast we possibly can. It might be less, it might be more. It's not to the dollar. This is our closest evaluation right now.
All right, and the dynamic nature, I guess, was what I was looking for. So,
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, I will. Sorry, I didn't hit it on the nose right to start. I eventually find my way there. So,
right.
Yes,
I probably could have asked the question more artfully. Thank you,
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On your package 151, please explain to me exactly what you're trying to achieve there. It says customer relationship management system. What exactly does that mean?
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee, Representative Esquivel. Overwhelmingly, one of the questions we've got back at the department is, what is the value that we offer to Oregon? And one of the things that we've done very poorly in the third-party evaluation, the contractor who came in and evaluated our IT noted, is that we do not have a good way to track and coordinate and quantify the amount of engagement that we have with people who work in the energy sector. Often we're working with people across our different divisions. So an industrial customer might come in the door for our policy and innovation team. They might be speaking to our siting team. There's a chance that they're also talking to our administrative or our emergency preparedness team, not to mention the work that we do on legislation or communications. And we have currently no sophisticated way to sort of gather that information to keep track of our relationships, to talk about how we're dealing with people over time. And that makes it increasingly difficult to talk with you about the value that we're offering to Oregon's businesses and our citizens. It's very anecdotal at this point, and the pressure that we feel and what I think the department is going to have to deliver over time is a really precise way to communicate what we're doing and who we're doing it with and how often. This feels like a pretty large gap for me in terms of the department's ability over time to prove value. And so that's what that is exactly what we're aiming at with this first step in our IT modernization plan that we're trying to put together.
Follow up?
Yes.
It's almost $155,000 per person per year. Is there something else in there that I'm not aware of?
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee, Senator Representative Esquivel. Yes, this is not just the positions. There's also going to have to be a tool of some kind. I will say that when we were putting this package together, it was when we thought we would have the tax credits as well. So depending on the decisions that the legislature make, and they might be extended or not, we don't know yet, this package may come down in cost. We're not exactly sure yet. We will have to go out to market to actually see what the available software options are. So it's not just the people there. It's also the tool that we'll have to buy at some point.
Follow up.
Yes, go ahead.
Will you have to purchase some sort of software or something with this in order to gather this information? Because you're data mining is what you're doing.
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee, Representative Esquivel, yes, we will have to purchase some kind of tool. We'll be putting the data in, but we'll need to put it into something. And that's the thing that we have to go out to determine when we're actually, if you decide to approve the package and put this in our budget, and we have to go do a contract for it, procurement.
Thank you.
Representative Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Similar question about package 150. Says one FTE, almost $344,000. What's all included in that? Obviously, it's not just salary, I would hope.
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee, Representative Lewis. So that's 2 years of salary and then other personnel costs, so PERS, medical, all the other costs that are associated with an employee. So it's everything lumped together. It is a PEMF position, so it's higher in terms of the hierarchy of positions that the state has in the management class. So it's all of those costs.
Salary and benefits only.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, Representative Witt.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. Going back to Senator Girard's questions about our potential liability. Do we have an insurance policy against our liability?
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee, Not against our broad liability. Obviously, there's the DASC risk pool, depending on the lawsuits. On the tax credits, it's a very different sort of situation. And in this case, given the particular case that we're dealing with on the potential fraud and the Betsy, there's no and there's also no way to know what our actual legal cost liability will be with that over time either. So not in the traditional sense, I think. No, we don't.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Okay, now we will get into our key performance measures. KPM1 is energy savings and production. This, a lot of what the agency does is not quantifiable. This is one area where we can quantify what we do. So what this is energy savings and production for the year that projects were completed. These are projects that hit somewhere in our programs. As you can see, it's got our EIP program, SELP, public buildings, residential, and other. And basically, this is what does ODOE do? What we do is we help Oregonians save energy or produce energy. These numbers are in billions of BTU. You ask, what's a BTU, British thermal unit? Basically, a BTU is how much energy it takes to increase the temperature of 1 pound of water, 1 degree Fahrenheit. So what is, in 2015, our projects saved 2,161 billion BTU. What does that mean? That's basically 28,400 average households, what the amount of energy they use in 1 year. We score this, it's the year that the project is complete. For instance, a project that is completed in December 31st, 2015 would get credit for an entire year of their average savings for that year. In other words, it's not cumulative, it's just we show up for 1 year. This shows that programs have saved a lot of energy over the years, and many of these projects have a long lifespan, so they will continue to save or produce energy for years to come. So that was what we do. Now, how well do we do what we do? Key performance two is customer service. We've conducted online surveys in 2012 and 2015, asking our customers how we ranked in five different areas: timeliness, accuracy, helpfulness, knowledge, and availability of information. And then we combined all those for an overall score. Our target here is 95% of good or excellent. We haven't reached that target, but we're trying. We are in the mid 80s, which relative to some other agencies is good. I've spoken with Department of Revenue and told them what our customer service scores were, and they wish they were close to that. I think they might be in the single digits because no one wants to pay their taxes. Anyway, we are working hard to try and increase this. We've, as Mr. Kaplan mentioned yesterday, we have a new website. We're doing a lot of social media. We have a monthly newsletter to our customers. We're doing internal customer service training. So we're still hopeful to get this back up. Another area, how well do we do what we do, is application processing. This first chart is percent of applicants notified within 60 days of receipt of application, whether the application is complete. This is for the energy facility siting. These applications are very complex, so we're not actually processing the application in 60 days. We're just telling them whether or not we have all the information we need to process them. As you can see, siting has done very well. It's hit the mark of 100%. Ongoing since 2010. This next page shows the percent of final applications processed within 6 days for the EIP program there on the left and the RETC program there on the right. As you can see, we haven't been reaching our target of 100%. Some of that has to do with our data capture system does not capture time that we are waiting for an applicant to get us more information. They send an application, it's not complete. We asked them for more information, it sits idle. Unfortunately, we can't capture that data. And then on the RETC side, even though we process over 16,000 applications a year, we are still up in the 90 percentile. So we're doing pretty well there, but we're still hoping to get that up. These programs are sunsetting in 2017, so we're hoping that we end these with a bang. Last biennium, we proposed three new performance measures. The last ones you saw, the first ones were really in the EDS program, and we want to do something for the P&I program. And so we proposed a few that we, these are larger scale targets. We don't control these, but we hope that we do influence them. KPM4 is the use of energy by state buildings. We track energy usage for all state buildings. We've been doing it for quite a while, but as you can see, we only have a bar there in 2015, because that's when we started tracking by building. Before, we only tracked by agency, so we could tell what agencies, how much they spent. We didn't know if they were efficient or not, because we didn't track the individual building data. So this shows for state office buildings only, state-owned office buildings, and it's in thousands of BTU per square foot per year. The target, according to the American Society of Heating, Refrigeration, and Air Conditioning Engineers, for an office building should be about 51 EUI, which Energy Use Index, or thousands of BTU per square foot per year. We're a little bit above that. In this case, we want to be below the lines to reach our target. We haven't quite reached that for state office buildings, but we are collecting this data by building, so we can go around to agencies and say, your building isn't quite doing as well as the other buildings, and we can help pinpoint areas that we can help improve performance in state buildings. Next performance measure is the greenhouse gas content of Oregon's electricity and stationary fuel. These two graphs are the greenhouse gas intensity of electricity consumed in Oregon on the left and electricity produced in Oregon on the right. Actually, those two solid black lines should line up, but to make it to show that where we need to be to reach our target. As you can see, the energy we produce here in Oregon is a lot cleaner than what we use, because we use stuff that comes from out of state that's maybe coal-fired. We have a lot of hydro in the state, a lot of wind, so it keeps us pretty clean. This target is based on the Global Warming Commission's goal for greenhouse gas emissions in 2035, which is a midpoint of the legislature's goal for greenhouse gas emissions in 2050. And basically, this shows where we are and where we need to be in order to meet that goal. We have a lot of work to do in order to get get below that line of 0.151 tons of CO2 per megawatt hour produced. This chart is the greenhouse gas content of our stationary fuels. So this is fuels that are used for residences, basically natural gas, and then commercial buildings, which some of them use petroleum and coal. And so again, the line is a target, or a point of reference of where we need to be by 2035 in order to reach the commission's goals. Key performance measure 6, percentage of alternative fuels used in Oregon large fleets. This is another one we proposed last biennium, and as soon as we started digging into it, we realized that we had problems collecting this data. And some of the large fleets, such as UPS and FedEx, their information they consider proprietary because they are competitive, and then there are literally thousands of fleets in the state, so we'd have to call up everyone and ask for how much alternative fuel do you use, how much regular fuel do you use, and that was got to be onerous, and all we could get really was a statistical sampling. So basically what we're asking for here is a mulligan. We're asking to replace this with a new performance measure. We're proposing a performance measure of transportation fuels used in Oregon. This is a lot easier information to collect. We can get it from fuel tax receipts. We can get it from the suppliers themselves. And we would have two measures. A would be for on-road fuel, and part B would be for non-road fuel, such as construction equipment, farm equipment, marine, airline, et cetera. So we would measure all transportation fuel, to provide a more comprehensive picture, and the data is much more readily available. So we would like to replace KPM6 with this.
I have a question. Is natural gas considered non-petroleum?
Chair Frederick, Senator Grodd, petroleum in this case is considered oil. Natural gas is considered a different fossil fuel, but I would consider them both a fossil fuel. But petroleum, this means oil or gasoline, and natural gas is a different. And that's the end of our key performance measures. I'll move on to the reduction options. The first one, reduce a position in P&I. Actually, this was taken by the analyst reductions by our CFO analyst. The next three are basically just tighten the belt type options, reduce services and supplies, professional services, et cetera. We get down to number seven is where we eliminate another position in the EDS. This would be a half an FTE. So we are phasing out some positions with the end of the tax credit programs. This would just phase out one a little bit earlier. Next one is eliminate three positions in the CELP program. Well, obviously, that one is going away, so that's kind of a moot at this point. Eliminate two central services positions, which would be in the IT area and our budget area. If it came to that, we would tighten our belt again and live without those. Last one to reach our 5% reduction is another reduction in special payments for the RED grant program. That gets us to our 5%. And then the next ones, reduce special payments again in our RED grant program. Eliminate a position in siting. Eliminate a position in the director's office. Eliminate two positions and reduce another position in P&I. Again, this would be phasing out positions a little bit earlier than is planned. And then reduce the months of another position. So total to get us to 10%, we would eliminate 10 positions, 9.5 FTE, and a little over $3.6 million.
So, Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, that concludes the governor's recommended budget. We just have two remaining slides left. Wanted to go over very quickly our legislative proposals for this session. We have three. The first is the biennial energy report. Yesterday, I mentioned this very quickly, that on my first day as a permanent director of ODO, I was actually meeting with a general manager from a consumer-owned utility, and he told me the department used to produce a very useful document that informed the entire energy community about what was happening in Oregon, what our system was doing, what its future looked like, and that he had mentioned that we have gotten very far away from that, and that we were essentially producing a recitation of our programs, a marketing tool. We would like to get back to the point that we're actually conveying the data to our community, to the legislature, to the governor, useful information that can drive policy. And so the biennial energy report has been on my whiteboard since that meeting almost 3 years ago, talking about and getting our team to talk with our stakeholders about what a report, what that would look like, what's the kind of data that would be helpful, what is a useful document that we could grow over time. So that's House Bill 2343. Another issue that's been on my whiteboard, Senate Bill 99, is Senate confirmation for the director. I'm under the impression that when the Department of Energy was first formed, the director position was subject to confirmation. And then at some point, Department of Energy was moved into DCBS as an Office of Energy. And when it was broken back out as its own agency, they didn't actually restore the Senate confirmation notion for the director. And although I'm deeply thankful for that, because I probably wouldn't have been confirmed, I think for the future directors of the Department of Energy, having that engagement with the legislature, having this our state be able to weigh in with legislators directly about the choices that are being made for that position is not only a useful tool, but a good way to encourage relationships for the head of the agency and with the legislature. So I don't know if
Senate Bill 99 will be the vehicle. There are a number of bills, I think, this legislative session that deal with that issue, but we are very supportive of that. Also, the governor has suggested that it's a positive change for the agency going forward. Finally, Senate Bill 100, this is very much in the theme that we talked about yesterday about improving the issues that we can. The State Home Oil and Weatherization Program has some, I wouldn't call it house cleaning, it's a little bit more than that, but it's not more than spring cleaning. We need to clean up some definitions and some program operation issues. This is a program that may be moved to Oregon Housing and Community Services. We would like to make sure that we send over the most positive program possible. Just to give you some idea of the kind of scope that we're talking about, the SHO program is required to contract with another state agency to provide phone banking services. We feed the information. DCBS is currently doing that role for us now. We actually feed information to them about the program. They call us when they get a phone call. It's actually wildly inefficient. There's no reason that we can't bring it back home. That will save money and make the program operate better. So those are our three bills, all relatively simple, I hope. But more importantly, I came back to our agency yesterday and was deeply struck by Co-Chair Witt's comment about kind of bumming you guys out maybe a little bit and killing fruit flies in the building. And we talked a lot about it as a management team last night. And I do want to say that the story I thought I was telling was a very positive one, in that this department is ready to go, that we have made a tremendous amount of changes. We have worked to make it to make the kinds of foundational changes that will benefit this state for years to come. And I feel extremely confident in saying that we have accomplished that. I would also further go on to say that the Joint Oversight Committee that met with us for over a year and reviewed every one of our programs, there are three different proposals coming out from members of that committee, and all of them, even though they're not all the same, they all envision a role for the Department of Energy going forward. And to the extent that Co-Chair Witt, that you want to hear us be excited and eager about our future, we absolutely are too. And to the extent that I didn't convey that message as powerfully as I should have, I apologize. I am deeply optimistic about where we're going, and we are very much looking forward to doing that with you and your endorsement and with the legislature's confidence. And we feel like the decision that will be made one way or another about the different proposals coming out of the Oversight Committee will certainly lend itself to making sure that we have your best interests in mind and the state's best interests in mind, and that we're ready to take on that increased responsibility. I think this budget reflects that as well. The investment in IT reflects that as well. And we are excited to take on the challenge. Thank you for asking that question, so I got my enthusiasm in line. I really appreciated it. Thank you.
Director Kaplan, my initial question was probably premature because you hadn't finished your presentation, but I would just say that I'm enthusiastic about your enthusiasm, once you've confessed, you just move forward at that point. So now that's all behind you.
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, I will hold you to that if anything goes wrong from our past in the future. So that concludes our presentation. I think Ms. Connolly has a DAS follow-up, so we'll turn it over to her unless there are any additional questions.
Nope. No questions? Thank you. Please.
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, I'm Kathy Connolly with Chief Financial Office, here to give you a brief overview of the governor's budget for this agency. This agency falls within the governor's budget priority of ensuring Oregonians have clean air and water. The governor's budget is creating an agency that will continue its lead role in developing energy policy and addressing climate change issues that impact clean air and water. The agency has a number of emerging issues that it's discussed with you, the ending, the sunsetting of the tax credit programs, the transfer of the Small Energy Loan Program to Business Oregon, and continuing work on Hanford. Little background in the governor's, in this agency's expenditure history. as the agency's already discussed with you, we're seeing much reduced expenditures because of the sunsetting of programs and transfer. But I do want to note that a number of these programs, the tax credit programs, have long tails that might go as long as 3 to 5 years. And so they will continue to work on those programs even after the sunset date. But the end result is that what you're really seeing here is an agency that you're seeing expended its operational costs. The bright orange was their non-limited expenditures, and that's the SELP program, and those are by and large pass-through payments out to participants in the program. And now what you're seeing is a much smaller operations. I would note that the lottery funds, the red at the bottom, that's all discretionary lottery. It's all debt service. So none of that is actually operations in the traditional sense either. The other thing I wanted to point out, and the agency also pointed this out, is that federal funds are part of their operations, and those are declining over time, which is a little worrisome. This is what they spend it on, and all of a sudden this agency is looking a lot like many other agencies. They spend about half their budget on personal services, and the balance is on services and supplies. You still see special payments. Remember, the sunset programs run for 6 months of the next biennium, so we're still seeing those. And then again, there's that tail issue, so we will continue to see special payments. So, but what really changes. And then the next couple of slides are just comparing recent biennia. This is their 13-15, and you see debt service and special payments are a much larger percentage of their budget, 85%. The proposed, the 17-19 budget, they're only 28%. And then the next one is their current biennia, and you still see special payments and debt service is 84% of the budget. So this is going to be a very different agency going forward. Revenue history, I think the agency's done a good job of discussing that with you, the ebbs and flows of their federal funding, you know, the reduction of the, you see SELP moving out, so we won't go any further with that. Investments, they've also discussed with you, I think they did a good job on that. I would point out that the POP 110, which shifts the state energy, the federal funding they get under what is called the state energy grant actually takes some pressure off ESA by taking it out of the EIP program and moving it over to, I think it goes over to policy. It takes a little pressure off that. These are the reductions. So the agency in package 070 took care of the tax credit phase outs. So that's in that package you're seeing positions move out, you're seeing SNS move out. And that's mostly to do with the sunsetting of the tax credits. Package 90 reductions is where you see the transfer of the SELP program out, and then those additional small reductions that they talked about was this agency, unlike some of the others, they don't have general fund, so we didn't take any cuts in general fund. They don't have any discretionary lottery fund, so they have only debt service, so we didn't take any cuts in lottery funds. The cuts taken in this agency were really, again, a desire to right-size the agency and focus its mission on going forward and not having these tax credits. So that's why those additional small reductions were made, especially given that they did ask for packages that, again, the governor's budget believes they need these packages going forward. And so trying to balance out some of those new investments with a reduction in their current structure. We did the normal statewide reductions. And then I do want to put on the record that we support the requested KPM change. But with that, unless there are any questions, I am done.
Yes.
Hey, I have a couple questions. First, what is the dollar cost per FTE?
Can I ask? I asked the agencies sure.
To. Chair Frederick, Senator Grodd, that's actually in our supplemental materials on the OLIS. I don't have it actually with me at the moment, but we'll get that to you.
Okay. The second question I have is for KPM 6. Because natural gas, can we split that off so natural gas is a separate entity because I have an interest in the conversion to natural gas?
Senator, or Chair Frederick, Senator Girard, absolutely.
Okay.
Any other questions, comments? No? Thank you very much. I think we will close this. Let's see, when we have public testimony tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So public testimony is scheduled for tomorrow on this particular agency, and HB 5009 will close the hearing for this right now, and the and close the Ways and Means Joint Ways and Means Committee on Natural Resources as well for today, and we'll see you tomorrow. Okay, and we'll see you tomorrow.